Support for the Exchange podcast from NHPR comes from you, our subscribers,
and from the law firm of Primer, Piper, Eggleston, and Kramer, providing comprehensive legal counsel to New Hampshire businesses and their owners for more than 30 years. For more information or to speak to an attorney, visit primer.com. And from the New Hampshire Department of Agriculture, Markets, and Food. New Hampshire's farms and farmers markets are full of fresh goods, rich with agricultural heritage, and available all year long. You can locate pick-your-own-farms, farmers markets, fairs, and more near you using the directories at visitnh.gov/agriculture.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. Although the sweeping Green New Deal aimed at climate change failed on Capitol Hill, it has sparked a growing conversation about climate, with politicians on both sides of the aisle attempting to address the issue. And often it's young adults whose voices have been the most prominent, but the solutions they seek may vary. Some call for a dramatic shift in our entire economic system, while others focus specifically on cleaner energy. This hour, we talk with young leaders from both parties about how they view climate change, the politics of this, and what they'd like to see happen. And let's hear from you. Our email, exchange@nhpr.org. Once again, exchange@nhpr.org. Use Facebook or Twitter at NHPR Exchange, or call in 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. Our guests are State Representative Joe Alexander. He's a Republican who represents Goffstown. He serves on the Judiciary Committee. And Representative Alexander, nice to see you. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me, Laura.
Also with us, Ross Berry. He's treasurer for New Hampshire Young Republicans and the Manchester GOP. Ross, good to have you. Welcome.
Thanks for having me.
Also with us, State Representative Rebecca McWilliams. She's a Democrat who represents Concord. She sits on the House Technology, Science, and Energy Committee. And Representative McWilliams, good to see you. Thank you for being
here.
Thank
you, Laura.
And also with us, Lila Corman-Glazer. She co-directs 350NH, a climate justice organization in the Granite State. And Lila, it's nice to meet you. Thank you for being here as well.
Thank you.
Well, and Lila, I want to start with you. Pretty obvious question. How important is this issue to you?
Thank you for asking. I guess to start out with, I don't look at the Green New Deal in Congress as a failure. It's right now it's a resolution. It's not a bill. It's not a law. It hasn't been officially voted on. I think the Green New Deal is overwhelmingly popular. If you look to our South, 10 out of 11 of the congressional delegation in Massachusetts have signed on as co-sponsors. Six of the Democratic candidates for presidents have also signed on as co-sponsors in the Senate. The Green New Deal is something that brings me a lot of hope. I'm 26 years old, and I think about the climate crisis a lot. You know, I think about what the world is going to look like in the next 10 years. I think about whether it's appropriate for me to have children in the future. And the Green New Deal is something that brings me hope. I actually volunteered my time canvassing for Chris Pappas last year to help get him elected because he said he cared about climate and he wanted to make change. And he went to Washington and he immediately denied support for the Green New Deal, which is a bold plan for climate solutions. And frankly, I'm disappointed in our congressional delegation because we're in a crisis, and we don't have time for more representatives to go to Washington to uphold the status quo of the fossil fuel industry. We're in a crisis, and we need leadership. And I expected leadership, and what we got was complacency. And I think it's really important for listeners to know that it's up to us. It's up to people like you and me to get out and show our congressional delegation that New Hampshire needs a Green New Deal, because if we support it, then they will too.
That's really profound what you said. You're 26 and you're thinking, should I have children given this climate crisis that is said to be coming? That's profound.
Yeah, and I'm not alone. That's something that my peers are talking about.
How about you, Rebecca?
Great question. I think for me, I'm a little bit older. I'm 36. I've got two kids. And I think that one of the reasons I decided I wanted to run for office is because I do see this as a compelling reason for people to get involved in the political process and make as much change as they can locally. And that's why I ran for state rep, is because I felt that there were many needs not being met, one of them being our response to climate change. and what we need to do locally to mitigate the effects of climate change. We're certainly seeing that with small businesses around the state. Our ski areas are talking about, will there be anything after the next 50 years? Sure, they can make snow, but you know, we're seeing real impacts. Also, my family owns and runs the Lewis Farm here in Concord, so we're seeing some severe weather events over the last couple of years that have not been normal for New Hampshire, and they're becoming the new normal. We had rain almost every single day last August. That was extreme. August is usually our most productive year, most productive month, and we lost our pumpkin crop. And we also usually have a lot of sales in August, but because of the weather, we weren't seeing customers coming out. So that's a very real impact to my family's small business that we don't normally see, and we're starting to become normal in New Hampshire. Going back a year prior, we also had some severe drought. I think it was the second worst on record. So you know, this is not normal, but it's becoming normal, and that is climate related. And we need to do something about that here in New Hampshire, whatever we can. So that's part of the reason why I'm a state rep now.
Well, and normally on this show, I don't ask people their ages, but since we are talking about young people and their voices and their thoughts in this conversation, it's relevant that you mentioned both your ages. So, Ross, I'm going to put you on the spot, too. First of all, how important is this issue to you? And if you could add your age, that would be good.
Well, I'm proudly 29 years old, so I'm pushing off the big 3-0 for a couple more months. But in terms of climate change is an issue for me. I put in the backdrop of other issues such as jobs, the economy, and energy. I absolutely recognize that humans have an impact on the environment. I think anybody who doesn't recognize that is probably living a little bit of denial. But we also have to recognize that while climate change will have a human impact, so will hurting people's jobs and their ability to take home income to their family.
So it's one of a bigger picture, but becoming a bigger issue for you, Ross?
It's always been an issue for me. I've been a clean energy advocate for quite some time because it also plays into national security issues for me. I believe we should be making energy here at home in America and not dependent on countries abroad for it.
When you hear Lila say, I'm 26 and I'm seriously thinking about whether I should have children or not because of what may be coming, do you ever have those thoughts?
No. I look forward to having children. But I probably don't share the completely negative and pessimistic outlook that some of my colleagues on the other side of the issue do.
Representative Alexander, how important is this to you?
I think we need to recognize that climate change is a real issue. With regards to importance, I think it's, among other issues, very important. I do think it is up to the next generation of leaders to bring the New Hampshire values to the forefront of the issue of climate change. And I'm thinking New Hampshire values are being fiercely independent in the nature that will encourage the market to change, not the state-run solution. We don't need a Washington, D.C. fantasy land proposal. We need a New Hampshire solution to the problem. So I believe that investing in innovation and different clean technologies will be able to send New Hampshire on their own path to energy independence and energy security.
Well, and we should talk about New Hampshire ideas, New Hampshire philosophy, New Hampshire solutions, as you said, Representative Alexander. But as you talk about the market and innovation and technology and so forth, I want to play a little clip from U.S. Senator Lamar Alexander, Republican from Tennessee. Now, he has criticized the Green New Deal as so far left it can't be taken seriously, but Alexander did say it's not enough for Republicans to say what they're against. They need to say what they're for.
So I proposed a new Manhattan Project for clean energy, that we double energy research, and that over the next 5 years, we find ways to create lots of clean, cheap energy for our country and for the world, to clean up our air, to raise family incomes, and to deal with climate change. This would mean we would focus on carbon capture, on natural gas, on advanced nuclear, on greener buildings, on more electric cars. Much of it has already happened in the last 5 years. I believe in the next 5 years, the United States can lead the world in a new Manhattan Project on clean energy.
Lila, what do you think when you hear Representative Alexander propose this new Manhattan Project?
I think that at its core, the Green New Deal is about innovation and an investment in an American economy that works for everyone. Right now, we live in an America that works really well for the Koch brothers. It works really well for the CEO of ExxonMobil, and it works really well for the 1%. And the Green New Deal is a roadmap to an America that works well for all Americans. It's a climate solutions plan centered in economic justice and job creation, a climate solutions plan centered in innovation and an investment in industry. It's a plan that will lift up marginalized communities and communities of color. And it's a plan that will put Americans back to work, building the renewable energy infrastructure that we need to avoid catastrophic climate change. So what I hear from that clip and from what I hear from Joe about innovation and solutions, I'm all for innovations and I'm all for solutions. And those are center points of the Green New Deal. What's important to me is that we look for solutions to the problems that we have that don't leave large portions of the American society behind. I want an America where jobs are available to everyone. I want an America where healthcare is available to everyone. I want an America where regular people aren't struggling to pay for their basic needs. And I believe that the Green New Deal is a roadmap to get us to that America.
Go ahead, Ross.
So I just got to push back on some of that about the Green New Deal. And I believe Senator Alexander said this in his quote, the left is not serious about the Green New Deal. We know they're not serious because when this first draft was released, it was promptly removed from the internet. They took it down. It included a whole grab bag of kind of left-wing ideology that had nothing to do with clean energy, one of which was giving money to people that were, quote, unwilling to work. So this is what we say when we say the Green New Deal is not serious. And we, the Republicans, actually took the Green New Deal that was proposed by the now famous Representative Cortez, and we let him vote on it. And we bring it back to New Hampshire, and our two New Hampshire senators, Senator Maggie Hassan and Senator Jean Shaheen, took the very principled stance of voting present when they had the opportunity to vote on it. So I'm all about having conversations about innovation. I'm having about serious conversations. But the other side needs to come to the table and be serious about this. The Green New Deal was never a serious proposal. And if they're going to be serious about it, they need to bring something forward that doesn't include a bunch of things that are irrelevant to clean energy.
Well, and Representative McWilliams, and I can see you want to jump into Representative Alexander, but Representative McWilliams, to you first. This was the critique against the Green New Deal, not just made by Republicans, but some Democrats as well, that there was too much in this bag, that it should have just focused on climate. I wonder what you think.
So I want to get back to talking about economic justice. I do think that there is a meeting of the minds with both green energy and environmental policy and making sure that we're not leaving the least of us out. And so on the national level, that would be Flint, Michigan, lead in the water pipes, making sure that when we're addressing energy and environmental issues, we're also not leaving people behind. Here in New Hampshire, just to bring it back home, this is talking about PFCs at the Coakley landfill site. And the House did pass a bipartisan bill 2 weeks ago. To make sure that that does get cleaned up and addressed. And so this is about energy, environment, and people who need to be treated fairly. So New Hampshire has the highest incidences of childhood cancer in the nation. And part of that has to do with the way that we really have not been regulating some of these commercial polluters. So we need to be realistic that there is a cost to that. It's a human cost. And that here in New Hampshire, we're talking about PFAS and Merrimack now, that really is a cost. People are getting breast cancer and, once again, pediatric cancer. We know what's causing it, and we can solve this as sort of a holistic approach. So I want to pull back on saying that, you know, the Green New Deal was overreaching and that our New Hampshire federal representatives and senators really aren't on board. I think it was meant to be a policy and a roadmap. I don't think it was meant to be a realistic proposal. And I think it's okay for us to say this is our moonshot, kind of pulling this back to talking about doing all kinds of new energy. I can see both parties coming together on some of these things, and we're starting to do that in New Hampshire. So some of the other stuff that we've been doing in the House, the House Bill 365, focusing on net metering. It was also bipartisan, and it passed the House with a veto-proof majority, making sure that we can go from 1 to 5 megawatts for our large renewable energy installs. We've got towns chomping at the bit. They can't wait to do this. So I do think that there's areas we can meet on this. This doesn't have to be something that's partisan.
Go ahead, Representative Alexander.
So just to echo Representative McWilliams' points, there have been bipartisan compromises. There are Republicans that are concerned about the environment. I actually did vote to clean up the Coakley landfill as well. But I want to also get back to what the left is doing and what the right is doing for solutions on climate change. It was Governor Sununu in his first term. He requested an offshore wind task force to look at offshore wind, something that Democratic Governors Hassan and Lynch failed to do. It was Vermont Democrats that closed down the Vermont Yankee nuclear power plant, and that increased greenhouse gas emissions by 14%. So if we're looking at real issues and in the solutions to climate change, I believe Governor Sununu and Republicans are coming up with innovative solutions, and Democrats are just looking at these pipe dream proposals.
I would like to ask all of you about nuclear power and how that fits into it, and also explain a little bit more about net metering and how that fits into this. Lots of interesting New Hampshire ideas that you all have mentioned. But let's go to our listeners as well, because I want to hear from them, too. Our number here in the exchange is 1-800-892-6477. Our email is exchange@nhpr.org. And today in the exchange, young New Hampshire Republican leaders on climate change and Democratic leaders on climate change talk about how they see this issue, how they feel the conversation has changed, how it's evolving here in New Hampshire. Let's get your thoughts. 1-800-892-6477. And all of you, Sarah sent us an email from West Chesterfield. She says the New Hampshire coast is threatened not only by rising sea levels, but also by changing seasons and erratic temperatures, to name just a few. What's your opinion on a carbon fee and dividend, a way to price carbon and then rebate all collected monies to American households? Sarah, thank you very much. And we've all seen pictures of, you know, Hampton Beach in some of the recent super tides and so forth. She's referring to something that other people refer to in shorthand as a carbon tax. And Ross, I'll turn to you first on this. How do you feel about the idea of a carbon tax?
So I put a carbon tax where I put all other taxes, which is they should be a tool of last resort. I believe in if we're going to allow the government to come in and kind of manipulate markets, I believe the government should be doing that in a positive way. So I would look at tax credits first before any sort of taxation. Taxes are always paid by the end user. So yes, you're going to go and think you're, you know, hitting some big corporation with a carbon tax. They just pass that on to the end user. The end user is always every single one of us. So when we do those things, you know, it's all high and mighty when you do that and you have a good income or you're upper middle class. But when you're a blue-collar worker or you're not as well off, these things hurt. And we all see that here in New Hampshire because we have the highest electric rates in the country. So we know what happens whenever Source raises their rates. We know how it impacts poor people. So that is why I'm principally against any form of taxation, and I would wrap a carbon tax in there. Taxation is always a tool of last resort.
Although they're often referred to as the perfect market solution. You make it cost more, people find alternatives.
I think people are doing that on their own, though.
You know, the carbon tax is sometimes, you know, it's called a carbon tax by some, but Sarah, our emailer, called it a carbon fee and dividend, a way to price carbon and then rebate the collected monies to other Americans. And in fact, one of the presidential candidates that I spoke to recently was talking about this. So, Lila, go ahead.
So I absolutely believe that a carbon fee and dividend is part of the solutions that we need. And I'm actually really glad that you brought up offshore wind, because that's a huge success for New Hampshire. And it's an issue that 350 New Hampshire and allies have been pushing on for about 3 years. And I actually was the caller who called into the exchange to ask Governor Sununu in January whether he would ask for the task force. And he did. So thank you to the exchange. I guess I want to be really clear. When we talk about free market solutions and we talk about what's happening right now without a Green New Deal, it's not enough. I just read that opponents of a Green New Deal in Congress receive, on average, 24 times more money in campaign contributions from big oil companies than their colleagues who support a Green New Deal. And I think that's a pretty cookie-cutter example of what the fossil fuel industry is doing on this issue. They have bought out our politicians, and they're standing in the way of change. So we need to lower those barriers. We need to invest in innovation. We need to invest in offshore wind. We need to invest in local solutions. But standing back and letting the free market do what they want, that's how we got into this crisis.
In a moment, we'll talk about some more of those New Hampshire solutions, because that's really interesting. And I also want your thoughts, Representative McWilliams, on whether it really is a carbon tax or a carbon fee and dividend, because I can tell you've got some thoughts there. Representative Alexander, I'll bring you in too as well. And we'll keep taking your emails and calls. Our email address is exchange@nhpr.org. Our phone number, 1-800-892-6477. Keep it right here.
The New Hampshire Supreme Court has said the state must provide an adequate education to every child. What exactly that means is up for debate.
You're confusing what the definition of an adequate education is and what school districts are actually spending for bells and whistles.
People are really at the end of a road here that I think needs a change.
I'm Sarah Gibson. Listen for Adequate, a new series about how the state decides the value of public education. Thursdays on Morning Edition, only on NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today, young New Hampshire leaders take on the climate question, what they think next steps should be. Let's hear from you. Our email, exchange@nhpr.org. Once again, exchange@nhpr.org. Respond on Facebook or Twitter at NHPR Exchange, or give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. Our guests are Lila Corman-Glazer. She co-directs 350NH, a climate justice organization in the Granite State. Also, State Representative Rebecca McWilliams. She's a Democrat who represents Concord. Ross Berry is here, treasurer for New Hampshire Young Republicans and the Manchester GOP. And State Representative Joe Alexander. He's a Republican who represents Goffstown. And just before the break, all of you, we were talking about an email that Sarah sent in. She wanted to know how you felt about what she called a carbon fee and dividend. Some people call that a carbon tax, and Ross and Lila talked about it. But Representative McWilliams, I'd like to hear you too on this. What is your feeling about this carbon fee and dividend, or carbon tax, whatever you want to call it?
I think it's the concept is a dividend, and there is a fee, but there's a return. So unlike a tax where the money is taken and redirected, in this case, it is returned to the citizens of New Hampshire. We have a bill right now at Science, Technology, and Energy that we'll be dealing with over the summer and putting together for next year related to a carbon fee and dividend for New Hampshire. I want to note that New Hampshire tends not to be a leader on these things. That's just traditionally how we've handled large regional policy, which is what this would be. So we're looking to see some leadership from the states around us. And if there is enough initiative, these bills are being addressed in Massachusetts, Maine, and Vermont right now. If there's enough initiative from the states around us, then it would make sense for New Hampshire to jump on board about this. But I want to focus on something that one of my other panelists said, free market solutions. When we talk about the price of gas at the pump, that's really not about free market, because we are subsidizing gasoline at the pump, all of us as taxpayers nationwide. And so, yes, this carbon
fee. In what way are we subsidizing?
So the real price at the pump is significantly higher than what we pay right now. It's being defrayed through our tax dollars nationally.
Through subsidies to oil and gas companies?
That's correct. So it's not a free market, really. We're talking about a intentionally reduced cost. And there are lots of reasons. I mean, we're pretty car reliant as a society, and we certainly are in New Hampshire. We have a lot of elderly folks who could not get around by foot or by bike and don't have public transportation options. So as a state, New Hampshire really is car dependent, and we care deeply about how much gas costs in New Hampshire. It actually just went up 7 cents yesterday, if anyone's actually tracking that here in New Hampshire. That's a significant jump, and hopefully it'll go back down. But the idea of a carbon fee and dividend would basically be, this is the bill that's proposed right now, is that it would be a 20 cents per gallon increase. This is big numbers, but it's modeled off of the Canadian model, where individual citizens who are residents of New Hampshire would be adults over 18 would be receiving a check probably quarterly. So let's just throw some numbers out there. Let's say that you as a citizen receive a check for $1,500. Great. You have that to last for covering gas for the next 3 months until you get your next dividend check. But you're paying more at the pump in order to change behavior. The whole idea
here's
is
my question,
to make you not buy as much gas.
And I remember asking, and pardon me for interrupting, but this is something that I need explained to me. And I remember talking to Congressman Delaney about this when he was here. He's a presidential candidate. How does this change behavior? Wouldn't someone who was already struggling to pay for gas just use that check to help pay for gas?
Well, I think they would, but they would also consider carpooling or putting all of their errands together in one trip rather than going to the supermarket in the morning, coming home, going to pick up the kids after school, coming home. If you can combine errands, you're reducing your carbon footprint, you're reducing the price of gas on you. And this has been shown to change behavior because people will start to look for innovative ways to not pay as much for gas. The same thing with if you're at the end of your shelf life on your car, you might be considering purchasing an electric vehicle because you realize that will be a huge savings.
All right. Well, Sarah, thank you again for the email. I want to return to the issue of nuclear power, which I think you raised, Representative Alexander. How much of a role do you see nuclear power playing in New England to reduce climate concerns? And we should also add as a backdrop that nuclear power plants around New England are closing.
Nuclear power plants are closing around New England, and I think it's an issue. Nuclear power in New Hampshire accounts for 50% of our power in the state. I also want to get back real quick to the carbon tax. Democrats aren't going to like this because they call everything a fee instead of a tax, and it confuses Granite Staters. What I want to call it right now is a tax. And what it does is it redistributes wealth. So it takes money away from people and gives it back to other people. So that's not a real New Hampshire solution. And let me tell you what is. And 350NH isn't going to like this. But the Granite Bridge Project is a real solution. It stores natural gas during the summer months when the gas isn't at its peak. And it will save ratepayers money during the winter. The idea is that strong natural gas, when it's cheap, will ensure reliability during the winter months. And it has to go through, like, rigorous site evaluation committee, as well as being built on existing energy rights of way. So it has nothing. It doesn't take away anybody's land, and it's already built on rights of way. So we're talking about New Hampshire solutions, and I see Lila wants to jump in. But
no, and I definitely want you to jump in, Lila. But a question for you on that. So for a long time, I have heard people say natural gas, we know it's a fossil fuel, but it's not as bad, and it's a bridge fuel. But it seems like we've been standing on that bridge for a long time, that bridge to this cleaner energy future. So some people are starting to say natural gas is kind of getting us off the hook for doing anything more substantial.
Well, I would argue that we've already set our own ambitious goals. Like, we're setting 25% of renewable energy by 2025. But we also have to acknowledge that our industrial electricity rates are more than 100% the rates compared to other states. So what are we doing to fix that? And right now, natural gas is the solution. It's cleaner than coal. We're transitioning away from coal. It was actually in 2016 that more of our energy came from wind and solar than it did from coal. So New Hampshire is already in the process of transitioning away from it. But right now, natural gas is the solution to solving our problems and keeping prices low.
How long should that right now last? How long should this bridge be that people always talk about? At what point do you say, okay, it's a fossil fuel, the fracking causes methane release and so forth, so it's not as pretty as it's often painted to be?
Well, look, Laura, we're concerned about the environment, but I'm also concerned about ratepayers. I'm concerned about people that aren't able to pay their heating bill during the winter. And so however long that takes to make sure that the elderly don't have spikes in their heating, I'm willing to take that because I think that is the right solution for New Hampshire.
Well, I'm definitely going to ask you about nuclear power too, but Lila, go ahead, jump in on natural gas.
Thank you so much. So just to start out, I think there's a misnomer between, like, what is natural gas? Natural gas is fracked methane gas. It's coming from the fracking fields of Pennsylvania, and burning methane causes climate change. The science is crystal clear. The IPCC report from the UN says that we've got 10 years to transition off of fossil fuels. At the same time, Liberty Utility is proposing a massive fossil fuel infrastructure investment that will be around for the next 40 years. So the math and the science doesn't add up. If we need to be off of fossil fuels in the next 10 years, we can't build a frack gas pipeline that's going to keep us burning frack gas for the next 40. That's a bridge to disaster. And I want to actually go back to the point that you made about cost. The sticker price on the Granite Bridge pipeline is $340 million, and that's a price that ratepayers are going to pay. Every time our utilities build one of these fossil fuel infrastructure projects, they pass on the risk of stranded assets to ratepayers like you and me. That means in 10 years, when we have successfully transitioned to wind and solar, that frack gas pipeline that no one's using, we still have to pay that off.
Lila, I wonder what you think about the concern, though, that Joe raises, that these alternatives are not ready for prime time, so to speak, that 10 years is too short a timeline, that we have huge, huge energy needs in our economy. Everybody here has a smartphone. Everybody here wants the lights to turn on when they go home this evening. So what do you think about that?
Yeah,
that it's a nice
you.
Idea, but it's just not feasible in that short a timeline to completely get off natural gas.
Thank you for asking. So I think, to be clear, we are advocating to not build new fracked gas projects. We're not advocating for the immediate closure of the existing ones. I also want to say the energy goals that New Hampshire has right now, the energy goals that New Hampshire has right now are a slap in the face to my generation because they don't even get us close to a livable future. They aren't even close. If we can't even be asking for 100% renewable, if we can't even be talking about the changes that we need, then we are definitely not going to get there.
So you're not impressed with the 25 by 25?
I think that it's pitiful. You know, I think we need to ask for the change that we need because we're in a national moment of crisis. Let's ask for the change that we need. And if we fall short, we fall short. But we know that we have tried. We know that we have done everything we can to give my generation a livable future.
What do you think, Joe? Are Republicans not being bold enough?
Well, I would argue that we're doing what we can in New Hampshire. Climate 350 is a national organization, so they lobby for national issues. And what we're doing right now is having a New Hampshire solution to the problem. So 350NH is an off plug of a national organization, but right now out of state money is coming in and telling us what we should and shouldn't do. So what I'm saying right here is our solution, the 25 by 25, is completely reasonable and doesn't spike on the taxpayers.
And 25 by 25, by the way, was put in place, correct me if I'm wrong, by John Lynch, right, as part of the renewable portfolio standard some years ago. Somebody correct me if I'm wrong on that, but that's my memory. Something was said about your organization, Lila. Just address it quickly, please, and then I want to bring our other guests in and also go back to our listeners.
Thank you. Just to clarify, 350 New Hampshire is an independent organization by and for the people of New Hampshire. I'm the co-director. I'm also in charge of fundraising, so I can say with extreme certainty that the overwhelming majority of the financial support that we receive that helped us operate our programs comes from everyday people like the people listening to this show. We decide all of our goals and campaigns based on input from the people in New Hampshire. And we, at our core, are a New Hampshire organization for Granite Staters.
Let's hear from some of our New Hampshire listeners. Our number, again, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Once again, exchange at nhpr.org. You can always use Facebook or Twitter if you'd like. It's NHPR Exchange. Katie from Sunapee says, throughout this conversation so far, I've heard subtle digs from one party to the other. I'm so dismayed by this. At a time when we should be coming together to find solutions, I find it petty and unappealing and frankly not helpful. As an independent voter, Katie says, I could vote for either party in this next election. So as an independent voter, I'm concerned about climate change. I studied the environment in college 8 years ago and was concerned about it then. And I want to hear our panelists find common ground right now on the show and offer us voters some tangible solutions. Katie, thank you very much. And I kind of wanted to go there anyway. So thank you, Katie. And I think I'll turn to you first, Ross. Common ground, tangible solutions.
Yeah, I'm all about common ground, and I'm all about working together. And part of me wishes we could all put our swords down, but elections are every 2 years, and this sort of behavior is unfortunately kind of built into the system. I'm not a huge fan of it. It just is what it is, and I'm saying this as somebody who used to work for the Republican Party when I was the executive director. So I feel her pain as a Granite Stater myself, but these are the realities that we deal in. But I think we could propose something right now that could probably bring both sides together. Rebecca mentioned cars. So I'll tell a quick story about the car I just bought. So I bought a car about a year and a half ago. Very excited. I've never bought a new car in my life.
I understand the feeling.
I've always driven less than quality vehicles. And this is my first brand new car. I get in the car, I'm driving away, and I turn to my girlfriend, and she knows I'm a huge car fan. I watch NASCAR. I love cars. I love stock car racing. I love automobile racing. I turned, I said, this is probably gonna be the last gasoline car I ever buy. And she kind of looks at me. She was startled by that, because it's coming from me, right? Every Sunday I watch NASCAR. And she goes, well, why is that? And I go, well, because in 10 years when I go to buy a new one, owning a gasoline car is going to be like having a Nokia brick phone. People are going to look at you like you're funny. I think if in order to get there, we need to do things in New Hampshire, like we need to lower the electric rates. So when they do go to plug in those new vehicles, it's cheaper to do. And I think the technology is rapidly approaching that. So I would hope that maybe that could be an area we could find agree with, that electric cars are cool and maybe we need to find ways to lower electric rates so people can charge them up and use them.
So, okay, so that's one answer for our emailer who wants common ground. Go ahead, Representative McWilliams.
I agree.
We did it.
There we go. We found something we agree on. And, you know, we're not that far apart as parties and as humans who live in New Hampshire and care about these issues.
Well, and as young people who grew up hearing about this issue and seeing some of the impacts.
But I do want to say that we had a really great debate at Science, Technology, and Energy at our committee meeting earlier this week talking about why it's so hard to find electric cars on the lot in New Hampshire. And so this is interesting. You know, I'm very involved in the city of Concord, and we have a commitment to go 100% renewable for electricity by 2030. So part of that is switching our fleet for the city and obviously incentivizing electric cars. And so one of the things we ran into is, well, it's really hard to have these sort of showcase days where the electric cars all come together and people can drive them around. It's hard to get dealers to come. You can get people who own an electric car and share that with the public and do a drive around. But the issue is that because our emission standards in New Hampshire are not as stringent as all of the states around us, the dealers in other states like Massachusetts are taking those electric vehicles for their lots and getting incentives and getting bonuses for selling them, whereas in New Hampshire, it's harder to find them. But the closing rate, when you show up to a dealer at New Hampshire and you try out an electric vehicle, it's really, really high. People who try, buy. So I think for the caller, I think that one of the things we can do is demand having more of these electric vehicle drive days in all of our local communities, because when people try, they buy. And part of this is just education and letting people know, hey, these are options, they're out here. But from a policy perspective, I would challenge the State House to look into changing some of our emissions requirements to match those of the states around us so that we are competitive on this electric front and we can also be selling electric cars right off the lots and not having to wait for one to come in from another state.
And how clean are electric cars if the electricity that is generating their power is coming from coal or natural gas plants? You would have to make sure to achieve your objectives that they were plugging into solar energy or wind energy.
It's one big pool. When we talk about the electric grid here in the Northeast, it's one big pool. So everyone is contributing whatever source. I'd like to get back to nuclear, but everyone's contributing whatever that source is into the large bathtub. So obviously Concord's goal to get to 100% renewable electricity really does require committing to purchase electricity that is renewable from other sources outside of perhaps New Hampshire, but hopefully not too far. And that means we need to incentivize that here locally in New Hampshire.
Okay, so the common ground question, and Representative Alexander, I'll go to you, and then Lila, but go ahead, Representative Alexander.
Representative McWilliams makes a great point. We can work together and we can set some ambitious goals with each other. So I actually challenge the representative. Let's sit down and chat about some goals that we can set moving forward, because I think there really is some common ground there. With electric cars, I want to tell a story. My mom just bought a smart car for the first time, and she's wanted one for years and years and years. And she actually really loves the electric vehicle that she has now. But that was somebody who is transitioning out by herself, and in her retirement, she chose to go electric. So I think it's happening, but we just need to make sure that our renewable energy goals are being followed and on a state level, so that then the electric that's going into the electric cars is clean energy as well.
All right. Well, we're heading into a break, Lila, so I'm going to let you pick that up after a short break. Areas of common ground. I really appreciate the email, because that is a question that we definitely needed to get to. Coming up, more emails as well as your response to that common ground question, Lila. And we'll also talk about nuclear power. We keep mentioning that, and Representative Alexander talked about it, but I'd like to hear from others as well. Also talking about individual responsibility in this broader climate question. And maybe some more conversation about some of the New Hampshire solutions at the State House. We will talk about that all coming up in just a moment. This is The Exchange on NHPR.
Web just turned 30, and it looks like it's here to stay.
It's no secret, to keep your business relevant, you have to have a digital strategy. As an NHPR underwriter, your business can reach our ever-growing digital audience through our many podcasts, our e-newsletter, or at our award-winning news site, nhpr.org. Learn more about how you can reach our engaged online audience at nhpr.org/underwrite.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Tomorrow on our show, it's the weekly New Hampshire News Roundup. So join us for that tomorrow morning, live at 9. This hour, a panel of young New Hampshire Republicans and Democrats is here talking about the politics and policies of climate change. And let's hear from you. Your emails are welcome at exchange@nhpr.org. Again, exchange@nhpr.org. And all of you, lots and lots of listeners with lots and lots of questions, and I want to go to them in just a second. But Lila, I did want to give you a chance to jump in on the email we received before the break. Someone saying, look, I'm an independent. I'm disheartened by all the disagreement. Where do you guys find common ground? Everybody else jumped in, and it's your turn now.
Thank you so much. I'm really glad that someone emailed this in. And I'm not, you know, I don't work for the Democratic or Republican Party, so maybe I can give an opinion just as a Granite Stater. I think we absolutely need common ground. I think there's a lot of room for common ground. Safety, security, clean water, clean air, a livable climate. Those are things that everyone can agree on. So when I look at the Green New Deal, I'm looking at a policy, or I'm looking at a roadmap to a policy solution that gets at all of these issues of common ground. Because right now what we have, you know, the proposal for a massive frack gas pipeline in New Hampshire, that's a project that's going to pipe jobs and money out of the state. That's not a project that's good for New Hampshire. On the flip side, an investment in the offshore wind industry, an investment in the solar industry, those are solutions that are good for Granite Staters. Those are solutions that are going to prioritize our clean water and our clean air and our economic justice. So when I look at the Green New Deal, that's what I see as, you know, as a voter. I'm looking for a candidate who supports a Green New Deal, because that says to me, I support an America that works for everybody, not just a select few.
Let's go back to our listeners. And Shay is calling from Concord. Hi, Shay, you're on the air. Welcome.
Hi, thank you for taking my question.
Sure.
I just wanted to follow up on what someone said about Governor Sununu and conservatives focusing on innovative solutions, because New Hampshire right now has a huge opportunity with net metering bills that lift the cap from 1 to 5 megawatts in New Hampshire. And so last year, Governor Sununu vetoed this legislation. And just last week, Rep. Alexander voted against this bipartisan common sense bill. And so there is overwhelming support from the business communities, municipalities, and citizens, because this bill is going to help create jobs, decrease emissions, decentralize our grid, and create local energy in New Hampshire.
Well, Shay, yeah, thank you for calling. And boy, net metering, we've done whole hours on this. But Representative Alexander, just explain for the uninitiated what net metering is. And I know it's hard. Like I said, we've done entire 60 minutes on this issue.
It's very hard to comprehend, wrap my head around, to be honest. I mean, being a state representative, the problem is you have to go in there and, I mean, Representative McWilliams can probably echo this, is you have to understand everything right away. I'm on judiciary, so I'm trying to understand law and things like that. So
we can throw it to Representative McWilliams if you'd like, since she sits on science, technology, and energy.
She could probably explain it better than me, but the fact is Governor Sununu vetoed it, so there must have been a good reason for it, and I'll support him for that.
Go ahead, Representative McWilliams.
Sure. We're on round two of net metering in New Hampshire.
Yeah, I feel like I've had this conversation before.
So really what this is about is allowing a larger array of solar panels or increased capacity of, say, dams and hydroelectric power in order to turn the meter backwards so that you are creating and getting compensated for creating energy for a larger project. So instead of a cap at 1 megawatt, we're allowing up to 5 megawatts to spin the meter backwards. And obviously, anything over 5 megawatts would be a commercial producer. That's way outside the bounds of this. And really, the cap is 4.99999. 5 is really commercial. So what we're doing is we're allowing larger projects. This is a big deal for places like Nashua, where they already have lots of dams and water, and they want to do something with it, but they can't get up to 5 megawatts to net meter it. Same thing in Concord. They would like to do larger arrays, and we would love to be able to do a whole bunch of rooftops on schools, but not being able to net meter up to 4.999 megawatts has been an impediment. We're also seeing this with businesses in the North Country. We've got quite a few large projects proposed that have been tabled, just waiting for this bill to finally pass.
So to clarify, it's not feasible economically for cities and towns to do this unless they are allowed to sell more of this power back to the grid.
That's correct. And also for businesses. It's really creating an incentivized price for some of these larger projects. But it will also increase, I mentioned the bathtub before, it will increase New Hampshire's bathtub of electricity to be more renewable by doing this.
So what are the limits in other states? In terms of net metering? Yeah, I know some of them don't have limits at all.
Massachusetts is at 2 megawatts. So we are actually incentivizing a lot of those small solar businesses that are currently going booming in Massachusetts to come on up to New Hampshire this summer.
Go ahead, Ross, and then Lila.
So I'm a big fan of net metering because of what the representative mentioned, kind of about decentralizing the grid. One of the things that I've seen come out of Concord before is that they always want to do the exchange rate at the retail rate. And not necessarily the wholesale rate. And one of the problems with that is it doesn't take into account the cost of transmission. And I think that conversation just started coming up recently. So this is kind of relatively new as people gone, hey, yes, it does cost money to put these power lines in the ground or, you know, the poles and run them.
These are utilities.
Utilities, yeah. So, you know, I'm all for more energy, but we just need to take into effect that it's not, you know, the rate that you pay at your house is not the same rate as when you produce because there's a disconnect. There's a cost to transport that. People don't think about that.
So just to make it crystal clear, and please correct me if I'm wrong, Ross, the utilities want to pay people like me. I have solar panels on my house.
Yes.
The wholesale rate, mm-hmm. right now people are getting the retail rate, and you're saying the utilities do incur some cost for transmitting and managing all that energy.
There's been conversations about them having the retail rate. They don't even want, to be fair, they don't want the wholesale rate either because the wholesale rate includes the cost of transmission. So we just need to take that into effect. I personally would love to see the net metering cap gone.
Some states don't have a cap at all.
I would love to see it gone because I have the energy policy of more energy is better, and I'd prefer it to be clean. So if you want to have somebody that's going to put up solar panels on their house or in their backyard or a little windmill in their backyard, I say go for it. It shouldn't be drill baby drill anymore, but build baby build. And if we want to put these things up, let's do it and let's get government out of the way.
Go ahead, Lana.
Ross, I'm really happy to hear that. And I think it's so easy to get sucked down these loopholes of like the energy wonkiness and the policy and what it means. And I think just to state it clear and simple, what we have right now are barriers. If a town or a city wants to build a renewable energy project, we have a barrier. We have a law that is holding them back. And those are the laws that we need to change. I think step two, why do we have those laws? They make no sense. I just want to throw out there, Governor Sununu received $150,000 from fossil fuel companies and energy companies in his campaign for election in 2016. So that's a problem for Democrats and Republicans is receiving money from fossil fuel industry companies. And I really want to beg the question, who do you represent? You know, Governor Sununu, do you represent the utilities? Do you represent the fossil fuel companies? Or do you represent your constituents? Because right now, you're acting like you represent the fossil fuel companies, and we need you to represent us.
Go ahead, Ross.
So I'm going to kind of give just a little bit of pushback there, because it's not like the left doesn't receive massive donations from companies that they are advocating for huge subsidies for. And we can have arguments about what they're doing at the end of the day. These are corporations that are trying to back their people. And I think to just ignore the fact that the left is going to, you know, advocate for policies that make it to where only their donors are the ones getting any sort of energy supply, I think is a little short-sighted and kind of disingenuous.
Well, and we're looking at a show on campaign finance and its influence and how it's working and how some people think it needs to change. So I'll set that aside for now because I really want to go to Kyle from Milford, who says nuclear is the silver bullet. It is the safest, most reliable method of energy production. New generation reactors can use the waste down to nothing and have little chance of meltdown. I believe climate change is one of the biggest threats facing mankind. But anyone who believes the same and still opposes nuclear needs to seriously re-examine the facts. Kyle, thank you so much. And Representative Alexander, you talked about this earlier, saying that you felt nuclear should be part of the solution. But as you mentioned, several nuclear plants in New England are closing down. So what's the answer there? Build more nuclear? That could be tough.
Well, I actually completely agree with Kyle. I think that the new nuclear plants, like better, has better technology where we've able to transition to kind of a safer nuclear world. So if we invest in nuclear, I think that's a 21st century solution. So it's also important to acknowledge that 50% of our energy does come from the Seabrook plant. So we get a lot of that clean energy from the nuclear power plant. So we need to acknowledge that nuclear is the way of the future. And I agree with Kyle on this one.
What do you think, Representative McWilliams? Again, we've got Seabrook in New Hampshire, but there's a plant closing down in Massachusetts. Vermont Yankee is in the midst of decommissioning. Is nuclear something we need to look at given this climate threat?
I would call Seabrook a necessary evil. I'm not thrilled about it. I do not see nuclear as the way of the future, but that's where we're at right now. And if our timeline truly is 11 years, nuclear is going to be part of that solution to mitigate climate change right now. For the long term, I would not support investing in or building new nuclear, but I do see that as part of our current mix, and it's a necessary evil. I'm not thrilled, but we're going to work with the cards that we've been dealt as a state, and that's part of the hand we need to play.
Do you want to jump in, Russ?
Yeah, I've got some great news for the representative. Solar and wind is actually cheaper to produce. New solar and wind is actually cheaper to produce than nuclear. So,
Let's put up some farms.
I want to put up farms. Let's get government out of the way and start putting them up.
Great. I support that.
Well, here's an email from Rachel who says, I can't help but note that this young, innovative panel is mainly talking about supply-side solutions to energy and climate when the cheaper, more effective path has to start with demand-side solutions. The technology exists, Rachel says, now to drastically reduce the amount of energy we need to live in extraordinary, delicious comfort. LED light bulbs, improving existing and new buildings, etc. I'd like to hear all of you talk about 21st century solutions. Rachel, thank you so much for that. And, you know, we haven't talked that much about demand side, reducing demand for energy and still living in what Rachel calls delicious comfort. What do you think, Lila?
Yeah, you know, I think people don't talk about it because it's not sexy and exciting. But if there's a silver bullet, it's energy efficiency. Let's tap up all the leaks on the pipelines that we have in New Hampshire. And the demand, or the supposed demand, for the GBP pipeline, it goes away. I think absolutely. New Hampshire, unfortunately, scores pretty low in the realm of energy efficiency for the states in the area. And that's a huge area of investment. I think, if we look at the bridge, what is the bridge right now? I think the bridge is energy efficiency. While we get those technologies like battery storage online, while we build those projects like offshore wind and solar, I think those projects are coming really fast. I think they're coming faster than we think. The people that I talk to that are experts about offshore wind say that we could have an offshore wind farm off the coast of New Hampshire in less than 5 years. That's amazing. In the meantime, let's invest in energy efficiency and make sure that we're ready for offshore wind when it comes.
You're right. Energy efficiency, buttoning up your house, isn't as sexy as offshore wind. Wow, that's cool. That's new. We did a whole program, by the way, earlier this year on buttoning up your house. And we did receive tons of feedback from listeners. People really did jump in on that topic. But go ahead, Representative McWilliams.
I just want to note that this is a priority of the House Science, Technology, and Energy Committee.
Right, because it is expensive to button up your house. I've got a big old leaky New Hampshire house, and so,
REGI, so
guilty as charged.
The Regional Greenhouse Gas Initiative. There are funds from every single electric bill, a couple cents, maybe 50, 75 cents, depending on your consumption, that goes into a fund that is supposed to go towards energy efficiency. Up until this year, a large portion of that was actually being rebated back to consumers to the cost of over several years, over $10 million was returned to consumers. So there's a bill that passed the House 2 weeks ago that will actually redirect those to energy efficiency savings through New Hampshire Saves. So for those of you who are not familiar with New Hampshire Saves, check out nhsaves.com. There's all kinds of ways that you can get money to do things like energy audits, weatherization, heating and cooling, upgrading appliances, lighting, LEDs, and even income qualified initiatives for people who are low income. This is all a program that is being funded by these REGI funds, and it's going to get significantly more funded come June, provided there isn't a veto. So I do think that this is a big deal for everyone in New Hampshire to check out nhsaves.com.
And if people want to learn more about that, I encourage them to go on our website, nhpr.org/exchange. Check out the show that our producer Ali Ashinsky put together in January about this, because there was a lot of practical information on the website. Last question for all of you, and it comes from Steve in Milton, who says, do the panelists believe that individual responsibility plays a role in reducing greenhouse warming? What do each of these individuals do to reduce their carbon footprints? And I'll go around the table, and Lila, I'll start with you first.
Thank you. So
where do you live, by the way? Because that's a big question, if you can walk or bike.
I live in Dover, and I can walk to work most days. So I think that's a great question, and individual action isn't enough. And that's, you know, just to give an example, I'm a renter. I can't just put solar on my house. And so individual action isn't enough. What I tell individuals, what you can do if you really want to make change as an individual, you should join an organization fighting for systemic change.
Ross, how about you?
So I am a newly proud homeowner. I'm looking at putting solar on my property. And one of the things that I do is when I'm making improvements, I'm a homeowner and a landlord now, I'm looking at making energy efficiency increases in my house. And part of that is driven by the desire to get a lower electric bill. Also, when I was shopping for homes, I intentionally sought out homes that had electric heat. And I know it's more expensive, but at the end of the day, that's going to be the future.
Because you can be hooking up to that grid eventually that will be cleaner energy than traditional oil heat. How about you, Representative Alexander?
So I go to the grocery store probably every day, twice a day. So I never need a bag, so I'll always carry out my groceries just in my hand. I know it's little things that'll save it. But we did have votes on plastic bag and straw bans in the state house. I did vote no on both of those bans. And the reason why I did is because it's not New Hampshire that should judge what people are doing. It's everybody should be making that change themselves. So when I grab a coffee at the local coffee shop, I'll forego a straw in most situations. Also important to point out that UNH has already transitioned to a straw-free campus, and they've done their own clean energy buildings. They've gotten awards for how clean their buildings are and sustainable. So those are local, and those are solutions to the problem that happens on the individual basis. So as long as individuals choose to make the change, I think that's enough.
Representative McWilliams, with the last word.
Thank you very much. So in my life outside of being a state representative, where I actually get paid to work, I don't get paid to be a state representative other than 100 bucks a year.
And you don't even get the mileage because you live in Concord.
I know. It's you know, 7 miles. I could bike it. I'm an architect, and I think that it's really important that we focus on what we're doing with our buildings. That matters. So deep energy retrofit in our 1830s farmhouse, adding insulation, that made a big difference for our electric bill and for heating and cooling. Using occupancy sensors for the lights in our house. We did that. That's smart. Do they just turn off when no one moves around? Timers on our heat. We do use electric heat. We're in the process of hooking up to solar. We've got a 13-acre array that's coming into the farm. And we compost because we are a farm and we accept compost from people around us.
That's interesting. And that's a whole show that we have done. People who live in apartments, like Lila, may not have the opportunity to compost, but they can find a local farm.
That's right. It reduces our waste
there
significantly.
All right. All of you, this has been great. I really appreciate everybody coming in. Lila, thank you very much for being here. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
That's Lila Corman-Glazer, co-director of 350NH. Representative McWilliams, good to see you. Thank you for being here.
Thank you very much, Laura.
That's Rebecca McWilliams. She's a Democrat who represents Concord. Ross Berry, thank you also. Good to see you. Ross Berry, treasurer for New Hampshire Young Republicans, and Representative Joe Alexander. Good to have you here. Thank you very much. That's Joe Alexander. He's a Republican who represents Goffstown. This is The Exchange on NHPR.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters. If you liked what you heard, spread the word. Give us a review on Apple Podcasts to help other listeners find us. And thanks.